You're listening to Good on Paper, a bookish podcast. I'm Jenny.
And I'm Rachel.
Join us as we journey together into the land of fiction, where the men are brave, the quests are epic, and everything is better on paper. Hi, everyone!
Hi, guys!
We are back, and today we are talking about our favorite book villains.
Who? Instead of book friends, it's bad boys or girls.
Yeah. Oh, are we doing like favorite book villains that we would date? Or are we doing like just book villains?
Ooh, I don't know if I would date any of these, honestly.
Okay. Just to clarify. Yeah. Rachel and I did not clarify this for ourselves before we started. No. So this like is not going to be favorite book villains that we would date necessarily. There might be one or two of them thrown in. This is just like favorite book villains in general.
We could do a separate video of like favorite bad boys.
Yeah.
That would
make sense. I'm not really one for the bad boys one, so that would probably be a very short episode. But you know,
there's a few that like I wouldn't necessarily date as is, but I'm like, I want a redemption story because I see potential in this character kind of thing.
Yeah. Like I guess like Heathcliff, like he's not like a super favorite crush of mine, but I like him enough that I would include him on the list. And he could definitely be classified as a bad boy. So I could come up with a few.
Yeah. But just to clarify, this is not necessarily people we would date. I would not date any of the ones on my list.
Yeah. I would probably date some of them, and I'll let you guys know as we're going through, like,
there you go.
My thoughts on them.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
So who wants to start? I was just going to ask.
Okay. I can start.
Okay, so
I would say the very first person. Okay, so when Rachel posed this idea, one villain popped into my mind, like, right away. I think this man is the villain of villains. Like, he's, like, your classical villain from childhood. He is just, like, the villain archetype. And it is Captain Hook.
Oh, like, my gosh.
Gotta love Captain Hook. I mean, has there been a better villain written in history? He's a pirate. He's got his hook. He's got the whole like thing going on with Peter Pan. I mean, when you talk about, it's not stakes, but you know, when the author, there's a word for it, but when the author sets up the reason for being between these two characters, I mean, that is just so well done. He's always hated Peter.
Yeah.
But Peter cut off his hand, and like that is like the real like clincher. But the fact Peter cutting off his hand is his identity because he's Captain Hook. I mean, it's just, it's so well done. Like, it's his identity. It's his relationship with Peter. He's got, like, the long 1600s curls and, like, the pirate coat. I mean, you just don't get a better villain than Captain Hook. I'm sorry. Like, he's the best villain. And in a very certain Captain Hook fan fiction retelling, I might date him. I could see how Captain Hook could be sexy. I could see how that might work. Like, not as is, but like, I could see how he could be romanticized a bit there. I mean, he's a pirate. Like,
yeah. I feel like I understand why people like to rewrite that character as like morally gray or a hero, because the damage that he's endured, like how that would kind of like, you know, when you give a bad guy a backstory, he earns empathy.
Exactly.
I would say, like, for me, I can definitely see dating Captain Hook if we're talking about like Once Upon a Time Captain Hook, because you know, I'm like, all right, damaged goods, you have the potential to be a good guy, I'm into it, you wear the leather really well.
Exactly. Like, and he has that whole pirate aesthetic. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That is always attractive. Like, you can't go wrong with a pirate. Like,
yeah. I always say, like, and I've said it before that, like, my thing secretly is pirates. I love pirates so much. I'm like, if I could marry a pirate, but I don't want to marry a pirate. I actually wish that I could marry a treasure hunter from that time period. Mm-hmm. So he's like, he could still be like a good guy instead of super disgusting like a lot of pirates were.
That probably explains so much about how, okay, so in your second book, my favorite part of that whole book was like the, Were they on a pirate ship or was it just like a nautical ship?
I mean, it was just a nautical ship, yeah.
Yeah, but I got the pirate vibes because it's a nautical ship in like a fantasy world. Like that was my favorite part of the entire both books, honestly. Was that part, like the vibes were just like, it was perfect. So I think your love of pirates was like coming through.
At the time, I was like, I really wanted to write a pirate book, but I knew I had to finish the book I was working on. Yeah. So I was like, we're just going to throw boats and pirate type guys into it with lots of attitude because I need it.
Yes. Wait, so does that mean there could be a pirate series coming from you some point down the line?
Oh, for sure. And a certain nautical man is getting his own book or series. I haven't decided which yet.
Oh, I'm excited. Yeah. And speaking of pirate books, I'm going to shamelessly promote somebody's book right now just because it just released. And honestly, guys, this was like my favorite book of like the year and last year probably too. It's called Sinking Sands by Monica Booth. And I'll put it in the show notes. But it's like about like a girl pirate captain, which normally I am not one for female pirate captains because I'm a big historical person. And it can get, like, really inaccurate. You know what I mean? It just doesn't feel like, historically accurate. But this book was so good. It was, like, the perfect blend for me of, like, historical feel, like, a really accurate historical feel, but also, like, not getting dragged down by historical language or, you know, just kind of keeping the spirit of, like, the adventure going. So, yeah, Sinking Sands by Monica Booth. I think it came out the 3rd. So it's, like, brand new.
Okay.
Like, go read that book. It's so good. If you like pirate books.
I think what I like about pirate books is the adventure of it. What I hate about them is when I know it's accurate, guys, but I don't care. I hate it when they're really like cruel and they're really vulgar and like they don't care about death or whatever. They're just like, you know, free for all kind of thing. I don't like that. I'm like, I don't care how historically accurate it is. It's not attractive.
Yeah.
So I think that's why I like the treasure hunter thing better.
That's why I like historical adventure. So like Bernard Cornwell does that really well because he's got like his Saxon series and Napoleonic War series. So it's like you have a pirate, but it's a historical adventure. It's a glamorized version of history, you know, and you'll have like a pirate. Maybe he was done wrong by the king. I don't know. Maybe the king of England like cut off his wife's head. So then he, like, turns enemy of the state and bull in this way. You know what I mean? Like, and there's, like, not reason. But it's...
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like Pirates of the Caribbean. Where they're bad guys, but they don't do the really nasty things that real pirates would have actually done. Because then nobody would want to watch it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's not historically accurate, but that's why it's, like, a glamorized, like, historical adventure. Adventure, and honestly I love, like, that's one of my favorite genres is like historical adventure because it's just, I don't know, it's just so fun.
I agree 100%. That was the first villain that I expected you to say, Captain Hook. I love it though, that's so great. I feel like mine are so much darker.
Okay, well, so now let's hear one of yours. Now let's get back on topic.
okay so the first one that came to mind. And I guess it depends on your opinion of the books. Or like, at certain times of the books, yes, he is the villain. Snape from Harry Potter.
Yes, I love Snape.
He's my favorite Harry Potter character. I adore Snape so much. So much. And if you haven't read Harry Potter. Yeah, I thought we might have that crossover.
Yeah. Have something from Harry Potter, but it's not Snape. So we can probably do that next because I'm sure everybody's guessed who it is already. Yeah. there's only a few candidates here. But the movie Snape is, I mean, he is just like perfection. Like I love Snape in the book, but I almost think I like movie Snape more. Like he's just so good.
So good. Like Alan Rickman portrayed, like when I first watched movies, I had never read the books before. I just watched the movies. Somebody asked me who my favorite character was, and I said Snape. And they were like, seriously, people usually hate Snape. And I was like, Alan Rickman made it, like, so believable. Like, the balance between I'm doing the wrong thing for the right reason kind of thing. And I'm just like, I just, like, And I bawled at the end. I won't spoil it for anybody who hasn't watched it or read it, but I like bawled like a baby about it. Like, oh, I love Snape. I love like that kind of villain where they're a bad person, but you can they've done bad things, but you can like understand all the motivations and like you get it. You see why they are the way they are. Like, oh, so good. Yeah. So good. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He is a good villain. And I probably would date Snape. Like, he wouldn't be like one of my first picks, but I wouldn't be like opposed to it. Yeah.
I would totally date a younger Snape. I don't know if I would date him in his 40s right now, but you know.
He was just waiting to meet Rachel to get over the other redhead.
Listen, this makes sense to me because I actually always love the Grump. It's my favorite male main character is the Grump. So this actually checks out perfectly. I get it now. He needed a sunshine. Yeah. That was wrong.
Exactly. And he had one, but she loved another man. And it was, my God, this is so sad. Like, it's like, I could not like have Lily, like she has to marry James. You know what I mean? They have to have Harry. Yeah. Like, that like has to be, but then it also just hurts your heart because he wants Snape to be happy too, you know?
Yeah. I feel like that's one of those classic scenarios where I feel like the actions of the heroes kind of cause the villain. Where I'm like, I get that you didn't want to be with him or that you were upset about his behavior. But like, did you really have to like exile him from your relationship? Because I feel like you just caused the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say because we're not actually Lily. And he was getting into the dark art stuff. But like, I do feel like she could have tried a little harder.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or maybe she couldn't have. Maybe he was really just getting so nasty that she was like, look, if you're not going to be nice.
Yeah.
You know, and then he did get involved with the Death Eaters. So, but would he have done that if he still had Lily? No?
Yeah. Never underestimate the power of making someone feel like you believe in them or like that you're like never going anywhere. You won't give up on them. I feel like so many villains, if they had that, wouldn't have been as bad.
Yeah.
Because once they feel like they've lost everyone, they're like, well, then why even bother trying to be good? I'm just going to be evil now.
No, that's so true. But then there's also the fact, like, and people do this in real life where it's like, sometimes you get to a point with a person who's so toxic that you have to like cut them out and just not have any contact.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe it was that situation for Lily. We're like talking about this, like, it's real.
it is real in my heart.
It's real. So it could have been like that situation for Lily where it was like so bad. And here's the other thing too, though, if she had not died, like, I feel like maybe like, right, because they got married like right after they graduated, I'm pretty sure, because they were pretty young when they died. So it was probably like at the end of school when she started dating James. As far as I could tell, that's when she kind of cut Snape off because like he was not happy with their relationship. And so they probably went a few years without talking. But like, had they lived and like I could have seen them, you know, everybody gets a little older. So maybe now they're in their mid-20s and they have Harry and a couple kids. Like, I could see her like inviting Snape over to the house. And, like, they become friends again.
Yeah.
Slightly. I mean, like, I feel like James and Snape could have matured enough to the point where they maybe could have tolerated each other.
Yeah. I feel like Snape is the kind of person, the kind of villain who he never seemed to me like he really believed in the villain cause. Like, he wasn't actually a purist where he was like, oh, only purebloods. I think he did it out of hurt because he had been, like, abandoned. Versus someone who's like, oh, I fully believe in this evil cause. Yeah. So then it's kind of like, oh, he definitely could have been salvaged sooner.
I think so, too. Because I think he was just like an unpopular, really smart kid. And he didn't get love from like these other people. So, and he was very smart. And so he turned to like, he kind of embraced his weirdness. And he was like, you know, like he'd be like one of those kids who like, dye their hair black and like paint their nails black, and it was like, I'm like the weird bad kid, and he just like embraced that. And I think that's why he got like into the dark arts. I don't think he's like a bad person, but he's very smart, and they offered him acceptance and a place to grow, like, you know, because like he was making up all those like spells, like the sectum, the one that like cuts you know what I mean?
So
I think for him he was like, oh, this is a place where I can like excel and learn and become like a better like wizard, and these people, you know, aren't making fun of me, kind of a thing.
Harry Potter teaching us big lessons, you know.
I know, that's what's so good about it. It's just like such a huge world. Like, it feels real. Like, everything is just so real in it. Mm-hmm. Like, we just literally talked about Snape, the psychology of Snape, for, you know, 5 minutes here.
I mean, can you blame us? It's so relatable. Like, I just want to, like, hug him. I'm like, oh, you poor baby.
Yeah. And, like, we all know a Snape. That's the thing. We all know a Snape. We all know a Lily. We all know a Harry. Like, we all know people like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, we went to the school best with part. Them.
Oh, yeah. The best part is when you hear the Harry's kids' names. And then I'm like, yes. Aw, you're going to make me cry again.
I know.
Yeah.
I just wish, like, that... Okay, guys, turn off, like, don't listen to the next, like, seconds if you haven't read Harry Potter. I'm about to, I just wish that, like, Snape and, like, James and Sirius and, like, all, like, the original crew, I wish they had gotten to live to old age and, like, they, like, were all friends. Like, that would be so cool to, like, they, like, have barbecues at each other's houses. Like,
yeah.
You know, maybe or they would have gotten like, over their thing, their grievance with Snape. I think so. Yeah. If Lily was there, she would have eventually. Like, made them come around, and they would have all been friends. Yeah,
I think so, too. You know, yeah. Like and even, like, if Snape had lived to just see him, like, doting over Harry's kids because they're Lily's grandkids, like, that would have been sweet to see. Yeah.
That would have been so nice. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like, yeah, had she not died, he might have become friends with her, and he might have married somebody else and had his own kids, and I think that would have also really helped. I feel like had he been married and had his own kids and she had her own kids, like, they could have become friends again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think that would have changed a lot, but.
Voldemort ruined everything.
I know. Gosh, Jake.
I'm thinking of that quote book where, like, Harry's falling asleep. He was like, it was Voldemort. Voldemort who ruined all of these lives.
Literally. It's true. Oh my gosh.
That's
how
much I've read it, guys. I can quote word for word.
That's so funny. That's like me and The Hobbit. Everybody has that one book.
Yeah.
Okay. Really. What's your next villain?
My next one is Wickham.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. That's good. He's a villain. He is such a villain. Yeah. But he's such a charming villain. I mean, you gotta love him.
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh.
I mean, he's got the soldier thing going on. The whole kind of like rebel underdog, or you think at first, at least. You think he's like the rebel underdog, and that's why Lizzie likes him. He's like, oh, like poor Wickham. Darcy was so mean and like all this. But yeah, even though he is kind of just like, I can think of a good word for him that I'm not going to say, but like, you know, that's what he is. Like,
yeah.
I think nobody's immune to Wickham's charms, even until you, like, finish the end of the book, and, like, you realize that he's not that great of a person, but, like, he's still very charming, and I think that comes across in the book, and I also have a thing for soldiers, like, the red coat, like, I mean, he's just so charming.
Yeah. I mean, I know we differ on which Pride and Prejudice movie we prefer, but the Wickham in the 2005 version, he does look mighty fine.
Yeah.
In soldier uniform. Like, I appreciate
that's why everybody falls for him. All the sisters. Yeah. Like, you know, Lizzie, Lydia.
I wish we could have, like, gotten, like, an epilogue of him and Lydia, like, 10 years later. Like, did they end up getting along eventually? Did she drive him crazy? Did he, like, soften up? I would have loved to find out.
I feel like that's a marriage that would have just been, like, one of those marriages. Like, you know how in Jane Austen, like, some of the older couples, they're just always, like, bickering or whatever? And they've just, I feel like Lydia and Wickham's marriage is just one that just never improves. Like, I feel like she gets married at 15. Yeah. I feel like she's going to stay a 15-year-old for the rest of her life. You know how some people do that? Like, they don't mature.
I almost feel like they're going to turn out to be the Bennets. Like, she's crazy and neurotic and nuts, and he's just, like, waiting for the silence.
Yes. Like, I totally see that.
And he'll probably love his kids, but never really love his wife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's the dynamic I see. And then she's always like flirting with everybody still. And see, I don't even know if he'd get mad because I think he's such a flirt too. I think it's one of those marriages where they're always like flirting. Hopefully none of them is ever unfaithful, but like I definitely see they both are always still like flirting. Mm-hmm. And then he's in the army, so he's probably gone a lot.
It's true.
Might not be the worst thing for them. Unless she goes with him, because in that time period, some of the wives would go with their husbands and they would like follow along the army. You know, they had like you'd have the army marching and then you'd have like a pack of wagons with all the tents and the food, and then women and children, which would either be soldiers' families or prostitutes or whatever, and people who washerwomen. So these women would do the laundry and like the chores for the army, and they would be a mix of families and other types of women. It was just like they would just follow the army. So and I could see Lydia going with him though. She seems she kind of has like a Hoyden vibe. Like I could see her going packing up and going with him. And then like flirting with
see her, like
every man there.
I can also see the regiment. Her like vastly overdressing all the time.
Yes.
Because she's like, I want to be pretty. And she's like, look at my new ribbons. And he's like, seriously, we're trekking through the wilderness today and you're worried about your ribbons, Lydia?
Yes. And she's always crying and like she does. She starts becoming Mrs. Bennett as she gets older. So she's like, I simply can't today.
My poor nerves.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's funny. I never would have thought about adding Mr. Wickham to the mix, but I like that. Because that's not like an obvious villain to me, but he is a villain.
Yeah, he really isn't very obvious. Like when you think of villains, and it was me because I don't have my books, and I was like, villains, villains, villains. I couldn't think of any villains, but I was like, Wickham. I think could be termed a villain more so. He's probably more along the lines of antagonist. But, like, there's a clear good guy and bad guy in Pride and Prejudice. Yeah. You know, because a lot of books, the hero is kind of, like, the antagonist. And then at the end is the good guy, which definitely is Darcy. But Darcy does have the counterpoint of Wickham.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
like,
it's funny because I actually did. It did occur to me to think about adding Lady Catherine.
Oh.
That I don't know why that one occurred to me. But I was like, no, I don't think she's, like, present enough in the book for me to include her at, like, to think of her, you know, that much of a villain as far as like top villains that I would talk about. But
she is a good one.
Yeah, no, I don't like her. She was easy to hate.
Yeah, we all know somebody like her. I think that's the great thing about Jane Austen, like Harry Potter. Jane Austen is just is so relatable. You know these people in real life.
Oh yeah, yep.
100%. You've had these conversations before in real life. Like,
although I can't say that I know any Darcys in real life so far.
Yes.
I am definitely a Lizzie, but I don't know any Darcys yet.
Yet. Yeah. You don't know any Darcys yet.
Oh my gosh. It's awesome. Okay. My next one's not as entertaining. I don't know why this one popped out to me, but Denethor from Lord of the Rings, Boromir's dad.
Oh, okay.
He's, that for those of you out there, funny. He's very well known for eating his breakfast very messily in the movie.
No, it's so funny. When you said Lord of the Rings, Boromir's dad, this is what my mind did. My mind heard Lord of the Rings and Boromir and went to Game of Thrones. Whatever Sean Bean's character is in that, because I was actually trying to think of a good villain from Lord of the Rings. See, I'm mixing them. Game of Thrones. But then I was like, there's not really, because it's morally gray. So I don't really feel like there's a whole lot of villains in. I mean, Joffrey is clearly a villain, but I don't like him at all. And then I was like, well, Cersei, but then she gets a POV. So she's not really a villain. So I was like, okay, Game of Thrones is out. Like, it's too morally gray. But that's really funny because when you said that, I was like, oh, I was going to do Game of Thrones too. And then I was like, wait a second. Rachel just said Lord of the Rings.
Game of Thrones. Thank you, Sean Bean.
Yeah. And then I was like, his dad. And so I'm trying to think of Sean Bean's character in Game of Thrones. What is his name? Stark? Ned Stark? So I'm trying to think of Ned Stark's dad now. I'm like, Ned Stark's dad. Do I remember Ned Stark's dad? And now I'm like, wait. Rachel said Lord of the Rings. Boromir's dad. Okay.
Boromir's dad. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
No, I think because like obviously there's like a villain quote unquote in Lord of the Rings, Sauron, but he's so not present as a physical being and he's not actually like a character, so it's not really the same. And then there's Saruman, but I don't really have any love lost for Saruman. So for Denethor though, like that always struck me as such a sad character because I'm like, oh, here. And those of you who aren't religious, I get it. But it reminds me so much of like Isaac, where you favor one son over the other. And then it's like, and look what happens when you do that. Nothing good ever happens when you do that.
About to say, he's a really powerful villain in that he created almost another one, basically. I mean, I wouldn't say that Boromir is a villain, but he really walks that line.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? And because of his father's actions. So, yeah, that is definitely, like, a super powerful villain there. Not powerful, as in he has a lot of power, but, like, just, like, his impact.
He affects the story. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have this, I don't know why, guys. I have weird fantasies, all right? Don't judge me. But one of my, like, daydreams that I randomly came up with one time was, what if I went into Lord of the Rings as myself? And, like, I was trying to keep the story on track, right? And... Mm-hmm. It comes to the part where Boromir is supposed to die, but I feel bad and I can't let him die because I know that he has potential to be a good guy. So I save Boromir. But then I'm like, wait, we have to somehow pretend you're dead, because if your dad finds out that you're not dead, none of the stuff that's supposed to happen will happen. He won't try and use Faramir. Faramir won't meet Eowyn. Denethor won't kill himself, and he'll probably use the Palantir to keep talking to Sauron, and a whole bunch of other stuff will happen. So your dad has to think you're dead. I don't know why this daydream, guys. It's weird. in this fantasy, I fall in love with Boromir, and we're very happy. So let's just let it go.
That's a great fantasy. Yeah, that sounds great.
So I mean, he doesn't seem like a very important character in some ways, but he does. He's like a very domino effect thing with Denethor.
Yeah, like his death. Oof, yeah, like talk about impact. Like,
yeah,
not only on the reader, but like on the events that unfold. And actually, I would say that it's not a weird fantasy, and that probably taught you a lot more about writing than anything
That's
else.
That's so true. That is so true. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I used to insert myself. I had like I never wrote it down, but I used to have fantasies where I was like a character in Harry Potter. And I like interacted with all the characters and like, and I think really that does help you become a better writer. And some people write it down and they do like the fan fictions. Like even if you don't write it down, it's still like, you know, you're using your imagination. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you realize things about plot, you know, when you're doing that and you have to do the plot, you realize those things about how plot works.
Mm-hmm. That's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I learned so much from that daydream, guys. Also had a good time.
Yeah, well, this, okay, not only are we coming up with good villains, but I feel like we're getting into some really interesting stuff with each of them.
It's true, yeah.
There's just so much to talk about with books. I mean, you know.
Oh my gosh. I could go on for days. It's bad.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Yeah. That's why we started a podcast, guys. You're welcome.
We get to unleash all of the talking and you get to, you know, talk with your buddies about books, us.
Yeah. So I'll do the third one I have. And then the fourth one I have is kind of like really antagonist, not villain at all. So, but we might get to him. So the third one I have, who's actually a villain, is Draco Malfoy.
Ooh, yes. Like,
everybody loves Draco. I mean, you can't not love him. Loves
Draco.
I mean, the name Draco. Like, what a great name. And then, like, he just looks so cool because he's got the whole, like, icy villain look going. And then he's just, obviously, like, he's mean and he's a bully.
Yeah.
But, like, sometimes he's just really funny. Like, I don't know, you know? Mm-hmm.
No, I agree. And I always think about where... I don't know if it's true or not, but where I read that he can't conjure a Patronus because he doesn't have any happy memories. And I was like, that explains so much about why Draco is like, imagine if, and some of you probably have this experience, But like, imagine if you grew up in a home where you had literally no happiness mm-hmm. other than your mom. Yeah, she loves you, but she doesn't do the things that a mom should do. And so you're kind of always fending for yourself and imitating really bad,
yeah.
you know, examples. So it's like, how was he supposed to turn out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Because if you really look at his parents, that says everything yeah. you need to know about Draco. I mean, they're snooty. They're into the dark arts. They don't seem like they probably don't have a very loving relationship either between husband or wife or like parents and children. Yeah. I get the poor little rich boy vibe from him. Like his parents weren't very involved and he probably had like nannies. And so he had everything he could ever want, but he never really had like love and like affection and like a close family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
And then he does kind of have a redemption arc at the end. Actually, his whole family does, which I love.
Yeah. Same. I do too. I mean, I'm not sure that Lucius totally deserved it.
Yeah, he but really doesn't.
But Draco like, and his mom did.
Yeah, and for the sake of them, I'm glad that Lucius got the redemption arc because that still is, like, the husband and father. So, like, it's nice that they didn't have to, like, lose him and they can hopefully, like, have a happily ever after and learn from their mistakes together.
I know that Lucius, like, kind of gave off the vibe that he was super into the whole purity of the Death Eaters, but I almost think it was more fear for his family that drove him to be a Death Eater. Like, you know, how's the best way to protect your wife and your son? Mm-hmm. It's to join the bad guys so that the bad guys aren't gonna, you know, hurt your family.
Yeah, no, Lucius Malfoy, he's like a politician kind of character to me. He's worried about like saving his own skin and what's gonna get him the most power. So he saw, you know, and he comes from the old wizarding family, and I know he has, like, all, like, the dark relics, but had Voldemort not come to power, I don't know that he would super be into the dark arts. I think he just saw Voldemort coming to power, and he's like, okay, I'm siding with these guys.
Yeah.
Because, like, he's one of those people, like, might makes right, you know, like, I want to be on the side, I want to protect my family, I want to survive, and I want to be the top of the top, and that's what I care about.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why he really got into all that stuff. I think had Voldemort not come along, again, Voldemort ruining everybody's lives.
Yeah.
Like, he would have just gone on doing his, like, rich old wizarding family stuff.
Yeah.
You know, probably still tried to keep. Yeah. Sorry. He probably still would have tried to keep muggles out of schools. But other than that, I think that would have been, like, the extent of his mouth. I don't think he would have killed any of them.
Probably just would have been lobbying
the Ministry of Magic about stuff like that. Like,
and I feel like Draco, if his family had never gotten tangled up with Voldemort, he would have never endured a lot of, like, the trauma. But he also would have just continued a loveless home for the rest of his life. Nobody would have had any, like, real redemption. They'd just be pompous jerks. Because they would have never gone through anything that made them rethink their lives. So in a way, Voldemort kind of saved that family.
Actually, you're really right. Because, he would have just bullied Harry. But he and Harry never would have, like, had to fight for their lives together. Yeah. Or, like, Harry would have never needed to save him. Because there would have been, like, no mortal peril. So they just would have hated each other. And then they would have grown up and Harry becomes an auror and maybe he like works in the Ministry of Magic too. And they still hate each other, you know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
100%.
Wow. We're really getting deep into like villain psychology here, guys.
I think my like thing is that I really do like to think about like the psychology of why a bad person becomes a bad person or like, you know, oh, it makes sense why they're like this because of this. Not that it excuses them, but I understand it now. Like, I find it really fascinating. Yeah. Humanizing the bad guy makes sense because they are human, even though they're bad.
Yeah, I agree. And that's what we as writers get to do, you know? Mm-hmm. And even readers, when you're reading and you're getting involved, like, in somebody's, like, emotional life, even though it's, like, fiction, you know, you're learning about how people work. And, like, what makes them do the things they do, you know? And then you can go and be like, well, so what would have happened in the future? And because you know about people and you're a good judge of character and, like, kind of what makes people do, you can go, okay, so if this hadn't happened, then 10 years down the road, Draco would be doing X, Y, Z. And you can kind of, like, play out all these different scenarios. Because of writing or reading or honestly just interacting with people in general, you learn about how people are the way they are and everything just from like being a human.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating.
It is.
Even though these people aren't real, they are to us.
I know. So who is your third villain?
Okay, I only have one more. And I guess I'm going on a theme tonight. Because it's also from Lord of the Rings. And that would be Gollum. Which is more an antagonist than an actual villain.
Mm-hmm.
But, and of course, I also have a theme because literally all of my villains are people that have, like, tragic stories. And that's why they're villains. And, of course, Gollum has, like, a terrible tragic story. My dad, whenever we watch Lord of the Rings, I'm sure everybody else's dads do this sometimes. He likes to make fun of Gollum and Frodo over the ring. Like, they're such wussies. Why can't they just, like, toss it away? I'm like, seriously? Because it's addicting and it calls out to you and it's like temptation, but in like a physical form.
Yeah.
And, you know, Gollum is such a sad character to me. I heard somebody say that they haven't watched the movie because Gollum just like grosses them out. And I'm like, Gollum and like the Return of the King, he's like a little puppy to me. Like he's just mm-hmm. so sweet and sad and like yeah. needs love. But then in the end, it's not enough. Because yeah. the ring was more, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I love so that. Powerful. Like, because, and it's really true. I mean, your dad's like, what this, like, why can't he just, like, walk away from
yeah.
it? Yeah. But, and yes, the, like, the Lord of the ring does have, like, magical power that, like, ensnares you. But it's a very good allegory for life because that happens mm-hmm. a lot of, in life. And yeah. a lot of people aren't strong enough to resist it, whatever it is. Like, yeah. I watched a documentary about Thomas Massie, who's a politician, which it doesn't matter if you know him or not, but he was comparing, he brought up a Lord of the Rings reference when he's talking about being a politician. I was like, wow, yeah. I love this guy. So, but he said, because I guess members of Congress wear like pins or something so that you know they're a member of Congress, which I didn't know that, but or something like that.
Yeah.
And so he lives in like the countryside of like Kentucky or whatever. And he has like a farm. And so that's like his shire. He thinks of it as like the shire. Okay. And he said, this thing is like the ring. You put it on and you're in DC and people, they step aside for you and they see the pin and they treat you different. Mm-hmm. They treat you like you're somebody important because you've got this pin. And yeah. he says, I try not to wear it for too long because it's bad for you. You know, I take it off. I come home and I don't want to be wearing that yeah. for too long because he knows that power corrupts. And I mm-hmm. think the ring is that allegory for it.
Yeah.
You know, it can turn you into somebody that you yeah. don't want to be. Like maybe you didn't want to be when you started out, but then you go mm-hmm. so far down the line.
I like that analogy. Yeah. yeah. That's very true. Cause like, I think power is very dangerous, especially in the hands of someone who's been a victim.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like you finally have this thing. And like for Gollum and Frodo both, but the difference is that Gollum and Frodo have both been victims, and so they do have a hunger for power. And
mm-hmm.
but Frodo has a home to fight for and yeah. family and friends to fight for, and Gollum has nothing. He has yeah. no motivation to try. And plus he's been with the ring for decades, so he doesn't, you know, he's yeah. his mind is so gone on the ring now. Which is so sad. And I always think to the moment at the pools when Faramir grabs Gollum. And I'm like, dang it, Frodo. This is the moment where Gollum turns and it's your fault. Like, mm-hmm. why? Why?
Yeah.
Makes me so mad. So yeah. But I do love Gollum.
Yeah, he really is a good villain. He's very sad. I think that's what's so powerful about Lord of the Rings. It's just, it's so true. You know yeah. what I mean? We don't have magical rings. And like big eyes in the sky, but like we have the corruption of
yeah.
evil in our world, and a lot of times it comes with power. Because mm-hmm. obviously not all power is evil. Like there are some good people, yeah. but like it can be very corrupting. Same with, you know, things that, I don't know, like anything like alcohol or like any kind mm-hmm. of thing that is easily yeah. addictive and could mm-hmm. be very bad.
Yeah, totally. Poor Gollum. I would almost call him a tragic hero because he tried, but then he failed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my last one, He really probably shouldn't be a villain. So it's Gilbert Blythe from Anne of Green Gables.
Oh, okay.
So he's really more of an antagonist, but he is such a big antagonist throughout all of Anne's life. And I just, you know, you just have to love him. And then, of course, obviously, they get married. So I don't really think you can call him a villain. But he is one of my favorite antagonists. I mean, their relationship is just so funny. You know.
I've seen so many memes, but I have never read or watched it.
Oh, you should. You'd like it. Especially now that you're redhead. I mean, you just have to. You have to do all the redhead things.
I should. That's true. That's true. That's my motivation. It's because she's a redhead. Also, isn't it a little bit like enemies to lovers, like frenemies to lovers kind of thing? Okay. And that's like one of my favorites because all the banter is there and I live for the banter.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so perfect because like starts out when they're kids. So, you know, boys and girls don't get along a lot of times at that age anyway, just because of their boys and girls. And then they also have like, if I remember correctly, they have like an academic rivalry as well because Anne is very smart and she does well with school. I think that's true. I also just read a really, really good book about a boy-girl, enemies to lovers, academic rivalry. So I don't think I'm mixing it up, but I might be. But I'm pretty sure they also have an academic rivalry. But the really good book is another promotion, commercial guys, Voted Most Likely by Nicole Adair is so good.
Okay.
It's really good. It's like Gilmore Girls, Paris, and is the hero and her academic rival who's also the love interest is just it's really good. Go read it.
Okay.
Anyway, moving on. I always put in like commercials for people's books.
Hey, I mean I'm not complaining that you give me another book to read.
Right? Like, and that's the thing. Everybody's always looking for a good book to read.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just helping you out because you guys are gonna love this book if you read it. But anyway, so Anne of the Green Gables, I'm pretty sure they have an academic rivalry as well. But even if they don't, it's definitely very enemies to lovers because then they grow up and, you know, they mature and they realize that maybe some of their hate was also like they secretly liked each other but didn't know that or didn't want to admit it. I think definitely his case because that is the one, if you like He Falls First.
I do like
He Falls Gilbert First. And Anne because it's hard to tell, but because we don't get Gilbert's viewpoint. Well, also, I haven't read it in so long, so they probably do say it at some point in the book. But he definitely, like, falls first.
Yeah.
I like that.
I like that a lot. That's one of my favorite things.
Yeah.
I'm always, I don't know. I'm like, if the guy doesn't fall first, I'm like, come on, man. Be more decisive.
Yeah. But it's just so sweet because when they're young, like, he calls her carrots. Because her hair is red. Yeah. It's like carrot red. And she hates her hair. And that annoys her so much. Like, that is, like, the worst thing you could ever do to Anne. Is say something about her hair or insult her on her hair. Because that's, like, her one, like, really, really hurt in her is her hair.
Yeah.
And he figures that out. And that's probably why he keeps doing it. Because it gets such a reaction out of her. And boys, 11-year-old boys. And he probably thinks it's cute when she's mad, you know, as boys do.
I can't get her to pay attention to me, so I'll just make her angry because then she pays attention to me. Yeah.
Little boys and girls are so interesting because it's like they don't quite know what they're doing or why they're doing it. But you can see just like that male-female interaction that matures as they grow up.
Yeah.
And, like, but the way it is when they're still just not quite old enough to understand.
And it's interesting to see which ones, like, will just come out and, like, talk, like, tell you that they like you. They're like, oh, I like you. And then some of them are just like, oh, no, I'm just going to hint at it. And I'm like, oh, you're figuring out hints. That's cool. You're little. You know?
Yeah.
Like, it is really interesting.
Yeah, it's a good series because like I said, it starts when they're kids and I think it's like 7 books and goes all the way up until she's grown up and she ends up getting married. You know, it's the classic like childhood, because I think that's it's very common like for like little boys and girls not to get along and then they grow up and get married and it turns out that the boy was only like mean to her because like he liked her, but he was a little boy so he didn't know like what to do about that. Like,
yeah, It's like a joke. Like, if you have, like, if you've grown up someplace, like, in church or something, and you had a little boy you didn't get along with, it was a joke of, oh, they're going to grow up and get married someday.
Yeah.
Because the assumption is, oh, they like each other, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, all that tension, what else are you going to do?
That's true. That is so true. I mean, it's so funny.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, because there's, I think, like, there's something that's, like, you know, passion. I think that's why people like Enemies to Lovers so much, because there's like a kind of that kinship between the passion of hatred and like anger and annoyance with somebody and like the passion of loving somebody. And then, you know, if you have like a younger person or somebody who's just not very like self-aware, like a lot of times I think they confuse the two. Like they think they passionately hate someone, but the real reason is they passionately love someone, but they don't know what to do with those feelings yet, kind of a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I think that's why people like Enemies to Lovers so much. It's just such an interesting relationship between the two emotions.
Yeah, and I think when those two enemies finally get to become a couple, my favorite thing about it is that they get to be sweet, but they still banter, and they still, like, go back and forth, you know? They still volley. Like, I like a sweet romance, don't get me wrong, but when it's, like, really sugary sweet, I'm like, eh, because I guess my flirting style is it's more like insulting. So I'm like, I like it when they kind of banter and stuff. Yeah. You know?
And that's a very natural way of flirting. I mean, most people, I would say, flirt like that. You tease each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It's like little kids who grew up and just kept doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. But it's like on a more romantic level now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's the fact that, like, I feel like within Enemies to Lovers, they both grow and learn more about the other person and become a better person because maybe they understand something about that person that they didn't before. And so I just love like the growth and like redemption arcs that kind of happen with Enemies to Lovers. Like, it's so fun.
Yeah. It's so fun. Yeah. I get why it's so popular.
Yeah. So we started with our villains and we ended up with a very, very on-the-line antagonist, and talk about Enemies to Lovers, everybody's favorite thing.
Oh my gosh, we had so many rants in this one, but they were all really good.
Yeah.
Like, I enjoyed them.
Me too, yeah. I mean, like we said, like, talking about books is never going to be a bad time.
No,
so, yeah,
never.
So I hope you guys enjoyed this week's little book talk, not book talk, aka the social media, but literally this week's book talk. I hope you enjoyed it. And we will be back next week with another discussion. But in the meantime, you can let us know who your favorite villains are, even if they might be more a little bit on the antagonist side. And, you know, if they're villains you would like to date, or if they're just villains that you like purely for their pure villainness, you know, just let us know in the comments. Mm-hmm. Let us know in the comments on the video. And I think you can comment on the Spotify podcast, but I don't know anything about that. But you can also comment
What? I was just going to say, you can definitely comment on our Instagram page.
That's what I was going to say. You can definitely comment on our Instagram page, or you can message us, whatever you want to do to talk about your favorite book villains, because I know that's an interesting topic.
But, yes.
Yeah.
And always let us know, like, if there's topics you want us to discuss or questions you want answered. We would love to know, because we're always looking for new content ideas to talk about.
So, yes.
Yeah.
Please reach out. We would love to hear from you. And we will see you next week.
Bye, guys. Thanks for listening.
Bye. Hey, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed it, and tune in next week for another episode. And if you enjoyed it, please consider leaving a review so that other people can find us. And we will see you in the future. Bye.